No more, no more.
The debate.
Hello, welcome to The Debate. I'm Carter Tapley. The former CIA director has said that the U.S. President Donald Trump is likely to put up challenges to the election results. Come election day, will Trump not accept the results? Will he, as he has said many times before, refuse to hand over power to the next president? In this debate, we will look at the country that claims to have the strongest democracy in the world and how it may be facing a very undemocratic president, and that this may be the most undemocratic president it may have had in its history. First, our correspondent Rami Mazzaheri joins us from Chicago to tell us what the mood is out there on the streets. Rami Mazzaheri, of course, John Brennan is saying something that that Trump himself has said in terms of not perhaps accepting the election results. Is that something that many Americans think about or is on their minds when they're out voting during this election time?
I think it certainly depends on your party affiliation, and it also depends on, you know, what kind of person you are. Really sort of a hysterical idea, because there are checks and balances. I mean, you know, shock troops that would have to defend him from the army, from the other civil servants who would necessarily oppose him. It's something that really would be absolutely shocking, and I'm certain, you know, Republicans, you know, would want to uphold the system and would not permit, you know, Trump to do that. So, and I think this is also predicated on, you know, Trump being some sort of, you know, Castro type of figure who is willing to take a, you know, machine gun up into the mountains and fight. I think Trump is really a lot of bluster. But certainly this is something that the, you know, certainly the mainstream media has really kind of hyped the anti-Trump media show. Because it's a very sort of, you know, sensational story, and they have many things, like, for example, the allegations of Biden family corruption that they have to distract from. And it's also a way for Democrats to encourage their voters. They're very motivated and surpassing Democrats. So this is, you know, this is a way to say that, you know, they have to have this sort of landslide victory. Otherwise, well, that's one analysis of the situation. But I really have, you know, I sort of take the view that this is something that has never, there's no precedent for this. Republicans are fundamentally status quo people who don't protest. And I think that, you know, if there is violence, it's going to be, you know, not from winning, but, you know, from, I'm sorry, not from Biden winning, but from Trump winning and from the left. Going to be out there protesting. Republicans don't protest. However, 2020 is a year unlike any other.
Thank you very much for that. We appreciate it. Rami Mazzaheri there, our correspondent, talking to us from Chicago. Okay, let's bring founder of the DCReport.org and author of It's Even Worse Than You Think, What the Trump Administration is Doing to America, David K. Johnston, who joins us from New York. David K. Johnston, welcome. Well, first, the topic that we have as an intro to this whole debate is how the former CIA director John Brennan has said that the U.S. president is likely to, quote, challenge the results of Tuesday's presidential polls. Do you agree with him?
He's already doing that. There are hundreds of lawyers all across America who've been deployed to prevent ballots from being counted, to challenge ballots that are coming in, to challenge election rules. For example, in Houston, Texas, the, I think, fourth largest city in America, under an order from the governor, there's only a single place you could turn your ballot in. So the local elections officials arranged for you to drive up in your car, hand your ballot to an elections official who would then put it in the box. And they're challenging that and saying all those ballots, about 100,000 of them, should be thrown out because the people didn't get out of the car and put them in the box themselves. So there's a very serious effort already to challenge the counting of the votes.
It says, one of the headlines, David K. Johnston, Trump says that as soon as Election Day ends, quote, we're going in with our lawyers. What is he exactly saying there?
Well, Donald is very eager to challenge the vote outcome, and that tells you something. Trump says he's going to win an overwhelming majority of votes. Well, if that's the case, then why isn't he eager to have all of them counted? I mean, it's completely counterintuitive to be doing what he's doing if you actually believe that he's going to win. And so, you know, in America, vote counting often takes days. I've covered many elections since the 1960s and, you know, gone home at 6 in the morning or after sunlight because they finally finished at whatever county I was at, the counting of the ballots. Trump has already declared he wants vote counting to stop at midnight on Tuesday. It's just ridiculous.
Okay, let's bring in Charles Ortel. He is a political analyst who joins us from New York. Charles Ortel, welcome. Tense times in the U.S. from whoever we speak to. So our intro was about John Brennan saying, former CIA director, that U.S. President Donald Trump is likely to challenge the results. What is going on here? Tell us exactly what you think is going to happen with Election Day, votes coming in, and if it's not in Trump's favor.
Okay. Well, I'm happy to do that, but I think that when we look at the substance, the available evidence on the ground, and comparing 16 to 20, in 2016, Donald Trump was an idea with no political experience. In 2020, he has profound political experience. You can disagree with what he's done, but he's certainly accomplished a lot, gotten a lot signed into law. In 16, we had a candidate who actually went out and tried to win some votes, even though she, at the end, thought she had it locked, so she didn't campaign vigorously enough. In 2020, we have a non-candidate. We have somebody who has, you know, barely left his basement. When he does, he speaks in gibberish. So if we're not going to have any fraud, whether it's voter suppression or by Republicans, in theory, or voter suppression by Democrats or switching votes, I say that Donald Trump should do better in 2020 than he did in 2016, meaning he should get more than 306 Electoral College votes. If I'm predicting 340 to 350. So that's what I think is going to happen. I think if we get a surprising result that Donald Trump, let's say, is ahead on election night, but magically ballots appear out of nowhere in Pennsylvania and elsewhere, it's swinging it the other way, of course Donald Trump is going to contest the post-election day maneuvers as well he should.
Okay, that's the most important part there, David K. Johnston. As our guest there said, as he should. Isn't that what brings about chaos or perhaps some kind of conflict out on the streets with Americans? You know, because this is very serious stuff here.
Right out of Vladimir Putin's playbook. Vladimir Putin has said democracy is a joke and he wants to sow chaos. And these are the exact kind of things you see go on in places like Belarus. Ballots don't magically appear. Mr. Ortel is just making up nonsense there. He's never, to my knowledge, covered elections and studied election law or taught about elections. And the reality is that if you believe you're going to win the overwhelming popular vote, then you would want every ballot counted, and that's the opposite of what Donald Trump is doing. And I'll give you my prediction about this. It appears we'll have more than 150 million popular votes, a record in America. Donald will lose by a minimum of 16 million popular votes and probably 20 million vote margin. That doesn't mean that Joe Biden becomes president, because we do not elect presidents directly. We elect them through this Electoral College mechanism. Trump could win another victory through the Electoral College, but 4 years ago, Hillary Clinton and the two minor party candidates together got 11 million more votes than Donald Trump. He is a minority president. He only got 46% of the vote. The voting lines that we're seeing and the new registrations that we're seeing suggest very strongly that the numbers are going to be very much in favor of the Republicans. And interestingly, when you look at the races for Congress, it's very clear that a number of Republican incumbents are in trouble and are likely to be replaced by Democrats around the country. probably at least 10 seats are going to switch over. That does not bide well for Trump. But if Trump is confident that the American people think he's a great president and deserves another term, then the simple question is, why aren't you making sure that every vote is counted? Why are you on very technical grounds trying to prevent the counting of votes, to make it difficult for people to vote? Things like the one ballot box drop-off point in Texas rule.
Charles Ortel, I'd like to expand more on the last statement you made before we pass it on to David K. Johnston. I'm not criticizing you for that. I'm just wondering if that's the mentality and state of mind that you have. I'm sure many other Americans also have that state of mind or approach to the election results, that if Trump didn't win, then he should contest it, for lack of a better word. Isn't that going to lead to some kind of, I don't know if I should use the word chaos, but, you know, this is the vote, and this is an important vote. How are Americans going to feel, the ones that want to accept the results, but yet it's not in favor of Trump, for example? Hypothetically,
again, you know, you're putting me in a place where you're asking me to make an argument I'm not making. I think that the substance of what's on the ground, and with all due deference to Professor Johnson, I've been covering elections in this country since 2010 as a frequent guest across multiple media platforms around the world, including writing for many different publications. I studied this in college, and I've studied politics ever since. The playbook that we're talking about is a playbook that Barack Obama encouraged in Kenya when his preferred candidate didn't win, to sow mayhem and chaos and threaten the putative winner unless that putative winner would compromise to let his candidate come in. This is a playbook we've seen elsewhere. We've had other situations where, for example, Bill Clinton did not win a majority of the popular vote. That's because Ross Perot was in the election. But he did not have 51% of the vote, and yet he claimed a mandate. So I look at this state by state by state. I compare the results that I've seen in 16, in 12, with what I expect in 2020, and I think Trump will come out far ahead. Because I believe that, and I see the evidence with my own eyes, if we get a surprising result where the initial numbers come in that he's won Electoral College by a wide margin, but the states refuse to certify, particularly Democrat-controlled states refuse to certify, and then presto change-o, magically, new ballots come in out of nowhere that are not necessarily exhaustively certified, of course Donald Trump should contest that.
Okay.
But David, I don't think that's going to happen.
David K. Johnston, another piece of news here. Double-checking on the validity of it, but it appears to be true and not fake news. Trump releasing an urgent statement on Democrat plans to delegitimize Election Day results. The Democrats are not planning on conceding the results of the election, no matter what happens. Now, this is the type of news that is being spread on the net. Now, whether true or not, are we looking at this polarization that in the way that the news is being covered and in the way that people are thinking when it comes to these elections? My point being, are people who are Democrats or Republicans actually at some kind of breaking point when it comes to the results coming out?
Well, I've argued for a long time that our democracy is in very deep trouble. We went through decades of low voter turnout. That's clearly turned around in this election, tremendously turned around. We've had a lot of disengagement since Watergate with Richard Nixon, where a lot of people just threw up their arms and said, I don't want anything to do with politics. And it allowed people who grow rich off hidden government subsidies, corporations that don't use their own capital but use taxpayer money to build factories and offices and things, to mine the government treasury for their benefit, which I've written best-selling books showing with specific examples and the statutes that are involved. The problem in America is that people have, up until now at least, become disengaged from democracy. Donald Trump is not the disease in America. He's the symptom of a deep underlying problem with whether people want to live in a free society and whether they want to do the work of citizenship that's necessary for the liberties of the people to endure. And he has brought, I think, a lot of this to the fore, and we'll know when the votes are counted, and hopefully all the votes will be counted. We will know whether Donald Trump, in fact, as he claims, has this enormous popular support, or whether he does not. And a lot of people who are likely to vote for Joe Biden are not voting for Joe Biden. They're voting against Donald Trump. That will be an important thing to understand after the election. This could be a one-off, just as Donald Trump, if he doesn't get a second term, would be a one-off, and may not tell us about the future direction the United States is going.
Well, that's one of the things that Trump has said also, Charles Ortel, that he wants the election results out as soon as it can, that he's not going to leave it for the other results from the mail-in, for example, to come in. Do you think that the nomination of the latest Supreme Court Judge Amy Coney Barrett has something to do with the fact that he foresaw something like this happening? I mean, is that why he rushed or wanted that process to be rushed in order for the nomination to take place?
Well, I think he was within his right. He was the president, and the Senate was controlled by Republicans. He was completely in his right to go ahead with what he did do. Obviously, he believed, I would guess, that this appointment might help in a contested election situation. One quick point, though. You talked about fake news and things spreading on the internet. It was Nancy Pelosi, Speaker Pelosi, a very powerful person, who recently said that it doesn't matter what happens on Election Day, Joe Biden will be sworn in as the next president of the United States. How does she know that?
Go ahead, Devin K. Johnston.
Well, I think Mr. Ortel's taking that out of context. The operative word there was Election Day, but I'm not certain about that. And, you know, Charles is exactly correct that Donald Trump was entirely in his rights to nominate and the Senate to rush through in 38 days, making Judge Barrett Justice Barrett. But let's not forget that when Barack Obama was president, he was denied that right by Mitch McConnell. He had a right to appoint a justice to the Supreme Court, and the Republicans blocked that, as they did many other judicial nominees. And so I thoroughly agree that Trump had a right to do this. And in fact, if he gets a second term, I expect Justice Clarence Thomas will retire. And in November and December, we'll see another person appointed by Donald Trump to the Supreme Court. And that's entirely within his constitutional right to do so. But it is beyond dispute that Mitch McConnell and his supporters in the Senate denied Barack Obama a Supreme Court appointment he was entitled to. They wouldn't even give a hearing to a man who is a well-known moderate, a serious legal scholar.
We need to talk about the mail-in voting. Charles Ortel, you know, you have results that are going to come out, then you're going to wait for some of the mail-in voting, from what we understand. Now, I don't know how long that process could take. It could take weeks, according to even what the U.S. president has said. I'm wondering what's going to happen in those weeks or days or however length of time that's going to take for those results to come in. You could just imagine the media propaganda that's going to be behind that. What's going to happen? I mean, what are we looking at here in terms of how that's going to affect the way the American psyche, the ones who have voted?
Well, if we go back to the 2016 election, almost from the instant that Donald Trump was declared the victor, the resistance rose up. And it was, you know, let's have recounts, let's have all sorts of measures to deny him being inaugurated, and then we all know what happens after that. This country is divided. There are people who love unregulated globalism and the corrupt fruits that the insiders get out of that. There are people who don't want experts to tell them how to live, who want to live in freedom. Some choose to live in the corrupt big cities. I unfortunately have to live here in New York City. Others are able to live in parts of this country where they're more red and open. So to say that there's going to be more division, as if that's due to Donald Trump or due to Joe Biden, it's just a fact of life. We don't agree how to run this country going forward. And this is a big test. People like me want to see unregulated globalism blown to smithereens. It doesn't work for the middle class. It doesn't work for laborers. It doesn't work anywhere except for elite insiders. And maybe Donald Trump is not really in favor of that, but I think what I believe is he is. And so we're going to see a struggle between those who love the status quo and those who want to see it torn asunder. And it's not going to be something we agree about.
Okay. David K. Johnston, Donald Trump has said many things that have shocked many, not only within the U.S., but around the world. One of the things that he talked about recently, not too long ago, is he suggested that he would negotiate a third term as president because he thinks he's probably entitled to it. What's your take on that?
Well, under the American Constitution, you get to serve two terms, period, end of story. Donald is, in effect, suggesting that he would engage in what I think could be reasonably characterized as a coup. Fortunately, in America, our military officers take an oath to defend the Constitution. They do not take an oath of loyalty to the president. And surveys by military publications show that the officer corps in the U.S. does not support Donald Trump. He has very weak support among our senior military commanders in the U.S. So I don't think Donald also has the skill to pull that off. He's not a very good businessman, as I've documented in my books and from the public record. And I want to be clear, Charles is quite right that the globalization that we've gone through, which I have been one of the leading critics of in America, has been very badly designed to benefit a narrow group of people. And it is an important issue that Donald Trump has spoken out about, but he hasn't done much about. Our trade deficit is worse. Promises he made did not come true about what he said he would do. And all of that goes to the fact that he has almost no accomplishments other than his tax law. And as we just revealed at DC Report, he has essentially stopped the enforcement of tax law against wealthy Americans. The 24,000 richest families in America, only 7 had their tax returns audited. Obama's audit rate was 270 times the Trump rate. What Donald has done is maintained a high level of audits for the poor. The audit rate for them is 9 times that of his current rate for the richest Americans like himself. And criminal referrals have fallen 90%, and Trump's Justice Department has rejected 82% of those out of hand. Basically, the Trump administration has stopped the enforcement of tax laws against those people who, like Donald, have unverified income and have the greatest opportunity to cheat. I don't think that'll move any voters, but it does raise serious questions about the integrity of the Trump administration and how it favors the most elite economic families in America.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much. Political analyst Charles Ortel spoke to us from New York, and we also had founder of the DCReport.org and author of It's Even Worse Than You Think, What the Trump Administration is Doing to America, David K. Johnson, also spoke to us from New York. That does it for this edition of The Debate. When we come back, the entire team in the capital, Tehran, is goodbye.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and we're going to be with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. And in this edition of the program, we'll discuss the 22nd chapter of the Holy Quran, Surah Al-Hajj or Pilgrimage. Before moving on, let's just listen to some verses of this chapter and we'll be back with you. Stay with us.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
ذَلِكَ وَمَنْ يُعَظِّمْ شَعَائِرَ اللَّهِ فَإِنَّهَا مِنْ تَقْوَى الْقُلُوبِ.
That is so, and whoever honors the symbols of Allah, indeed, it is from the piety of hearts.
لَكُمْ فِيهَا مَنَافِعُ إِلَىٰ أَجَلٍ مُسَمًّى ثُمَّ مَحِلُّهَا إِلَى الْبَيْتِ الْعَتِيقِ.
For you, the animals marked for sacrifice are benefits for a specified term. Then their place of sacrifice is at the ancient house.
The 32nd verse of this chapter starts stating, ذَلِكَ وَمَنْ يُعَذِّمْ شَعَائِرَ اللَّهِ فَإِنَّهَا مِنْ تَقْوَى الْقُلُوبِ. That, and whoever holds in honor the rites of Allah, verily, it is of the piety of the hearts. In other verses of the Holy Quran, we can explicitly see that there are two rites of the rites of Hajj among the symbols of Allah. One is Safa and Marwa, and the other is the camel of sacrifice. But the symbols of Allah are not confined to these two things, because all the worships, such as Friday prayer, congregation prayer, and the whole rites of Hajj are symbols of Allah. And virtue, the verse says, فَإِنَّهَا مِنْ تَقْوَى الْقُلُوبِ, that is, of the piety of the hearts. Virtue is of the spiritual state, which is the existence of which can be recognized by some effects and signs, since there is no much difference between sin and reward in the apparent affairs. For instance, often apparently the sincere prayer and hypocritical prayer seem to be the same, and the thing which causes one person to be valuable and the other worthless, actually one deed to be valuable and the other worthless, is that spirit and the innate of the matter which can relate to the hearts. So, the interior piety must have some exterior effects too. Whoever is heedless to slogans, in fact, his heartily piety is little, and whoever magnifies the slogans of Allah and respects the signs of divine religion and the flags of his obedience, this matter originates from the piety of the heart. That's why the verse says, ذَلِكَ وَمَنْ يُعَظِّمْ شَعَائِرَ اللَّهِ فَإِنَّهَا مِنْ تَقْوَى الْقُلُوبِ. Verily, whoever holds in honor the rites of Allah, it is surely of the piety of the hearts.
على مر الزمان تألقا وأضاء للدنيا طريقا.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic
we
approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Oh.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
The Quranic word sha'air is the plural form of sha'ira, which means symbols. So the phrase sha'air Allah means the symbols of Allah, which consist of whatever is being done in the divine religions, general programs, and whatever is outstanding at the first facing with this religion, among which are the rites of Hajj, which cause man to remember Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So, no doubt, the rites of Hajj are among the slogans that had been meant in this holy verse, specifically the act of offering sacrifice, which has explicitly been counted as a part of slogans in verse 36 of this very surah. We will inshallah get to that. But it is clear that the generality of the concept of the verse due to all Islamic symbols are still valid, and there is no evidence for the specialization of it to only sacrifice or the whole rites of Hajj, in particular that the Quran concerning the sacrifice of Hajj with the help of min, the verse says فَإِنَّهَا مِنْ تَقْوَى الْقُلُوبِ, that is, of the piety of the hearts. So min here is for distinction. So the Holy Quran is reiterating that the sacrifice is one of those symbols. And it is indicating that whatever is being done in Hajj, like Safa and Marwa, are all from the symbols of Allah, not all the symbols of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We also have other verse of the Holy Quran that says, إِنَّ الصَّفَا وَالْمَرْوَةَ مِنْ شَعَائِرِ اللَّهِ. Safa and Marwa are among the symbols that are appointed by the Almighty Allah. So they are among the symbols, so the symbols are not restricted to them. So one of the important aspects of the verse is to tell us that commemoration and respect and also veneration must be given based upon one important thing, which is the piety of the heart. So the veneration is not given based upon competition or being the winner. The winner is the one who is having the piety of the heart. And that inward piety must have exterior effects too. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this program. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Things always worked for me. Worry ends when fate begins.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird UTILSAT-3B, and IRANSAT or BAT-5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked in
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Jafar Sobhani. Please stay tuned.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wassalatu wassalamu ala khayri khalqihi wa alihi al-tahirin.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Praise be to Allah, the Lord of the worlds, and may His peace and blessings be upon the best of His creation, Prophet Muhammad, and His pure progeny. Patience and perseverance, tolerance and forbearance are common traits of the world's most successful people. Patience is a very high quality of man. Sometimes one errs in differentiating between patience on one hand and laziness in action, tolerating oppression and relying on luck on the other. Whereas patience and forbearance guarantees victory and success, while laziness and inaction causes misfortune and results in failure. Now we shall explain the difference between these two opposing qualities, illustrating them through different examples. A gardener desires that there be so many flowers in his garden that it always remains fragrant and the different colors of the flowers please the eyes and the atmosphere of the garden remains good. If the gardener wants it to be so, he must work hard. He should endure the sun and the heat and the cold and the rain. He must become habituated to the pricking of thorns also, and he ought to visit his garden often. Hardships that one must endure to attain the goal are termed as patience. If a trader wishes to earn profits and increase his wealth, he must undertake arduous land, sea, and air journeys. If a student desires good marks, a diplomat intends to woo the people, they must work hard, with utmost steadfastness and determination. Regarding this, Hafez Shirazi, the outstanding Persian poet, says, patience and success are friends of each other, success comes as a result of patience. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Jafar Sobhani. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.com/en, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care, and goodbye.
Around the World with Reporters.
Starting on Tuesday, November 3rd, there will be a second lockdown in Austria to contain a massive second wave of COVID-19 infections across Europe. All events will be cancelled. Hotels, restaurants and bars will close, and a curfew will be in place between 8 p.m. and 6 a.m. Universities and classes for older students will switch to distance learning. Chancellor Sebastian Kurz told The Nation, "We will have to do without a lot of what makes up our lives."
If the number of new infections continues to grow so rapidly, Austria's healthcare system, although it's one of the best in the world, will soon be out of capacity.
The country's health minister says Austria is in a race against time.
The turnaround must be achieved by mid-November. Otherwise, doctors will have to choose who to treat via triage. If we act now, we can gradually begin reopening at the beginning of December.
Health authorities are worried about the repercussions of an explosion of infections in October. On Saturday, more than 5,300 new infections were reported across the country, five times more than just 2 weeks ago. As a tourist and sport nation, Austria is affected particularly hard by the restrictions. The government has announced that affected businesses will get 80% of their revenue from the same month last year reimbursed if they keep all their employees on the payroll. Anyone not following the new rules could face fines reaching up to 1,500 euros.
The question that everyone wants an answer for is when all this will end. The definitive end of all measures will only be possible when there's an effective vaccine, experts say. Austria's Chancellor told the people he's confident they can have a normal summer again in 2021. Homa Leski, Vienna.
The United States' separating of Iran from the global financial system has hindered the Islamic Republic's ability to secure supplies of food and drugs as it struggled to rein in a resurgence of the coronavirus outbreak. The U.S. Treasury has time and again claimed that these items are exempted from the sanctions on the Islamic Republic. To delve into the issue, we talked to some MPs to see how Washington's targeting of over a dozen of banks has paralyzed import of drugs.
This is not true. Food and drugs have not been accepted from sanctions. In cases, the Islamic Republic has faced very cruel sanctions in its food and medicine sector. The United States has imposed unlawful sanctions on medical needs of those suffering from rare diseases. They are limiting Iran's access to raw materials to stir up anger among people.
One of the fields in which they are putting pressure on the Iranian nation is the pharmaceutical sector. Medicines are not used in military or nuclear sphere. The sick people need the drugs, but Washington has restricted the import of tablets and injection shots. This reveals their enmity with the Iranian people. I think our people are paying the price of standing on their own feet.
Drug and medical supply companies in Iran are now saying that the new sanctions have affected their work. Iran makes many of its needed drugs inside the country through pharmaceutical research, but treatments for cancer or rare diseases and transplants often rely on imports.
We must expand our knowledge. We must be aware that Iran will always be under sanctions by the Zionists and the U.S. Day by day, these sanctions will be expanded, so we need to have the knowledge to meet our needs by producing medicines domestically.
Iranians' access to medicine and their right to health is being threatened and may worsen if the situation does not change.
After sanctioning 18 Iranian banks as part of its maximum pressure policy, in its latest move, the U.S. government sanctioned Iran's oil minister, oil industry, and related companies. Humam Abedi, Tehran.
Afghans are marking the arrival of the birthday anniversary of the Prophet Muhammad under the name of Unity Week, at a time when Islamophobia is growing in some parts of the world and amid French President Emmanuel Macron's recent insulting comments about the Holy Prophet of Islam. People in Afghanistan are attending ceremonies like this one in Kabul as a show of respect and love for the Prophet of over 2 billion Muslims.
I'm here to show my strong support and deep love for the beloved Holy Prophet. Fortunately, we can attend different ceremonies that deepen our understanding of Islam.
We don't care about insulting words of individuals like Macron. This is especially because our leader, the Holy Prophet, has ordered us to be logically patient. Instead, we mark Unity Week to show how the followers of Islam's Holy Prophet ignore tensions and approve unity.
Based on Islamic beliefs, the arrival of Unity Week, as its title suggests, serves as a big opportunity for Muslims to once again return to the main teachings of the Prophet Muhammad, such as strengthening unity among Muslims. Some others believe that the arrival of the birthday anniversary of Islam's Holy Prophet is also an opportunity for mankind to review the life and words of the Prophet Muhammad to see the real face of Islam.
Unity Week, in fact, brings unity among nations and Islamic societies like Afghanistan. I'm proudly saying it that Afghanistan is one of the leading countries of the Muslim world when it comes to the issue of Islamic brotherhood.
I call on your audience to please study the true life and words of Islam's Holy Prophet. Yes, this is too important for anybody who is seeking truth about Islam and its honorable and holy leader, the Prophet Muhammad. Peace be upon him.
Besides calling for boosting Islamic brotherhood among Afghans, those attending ceremonies marking Unity Week say the cementing of national unity among Afghans is one of the musts associated with Unity Week. As observers say, the best way to lead the nation to a real national unity is to remove the obstacles in the way of the ongoing peace talks between the government and Taliban in the Qatari capital, Doha. Sayed Amin Alami, Kabul.
A shutdown is being observed in Indian-controlled Kashmir after New Delhi amended and repealed a series of decades-old land laws of Kashmir. The new reorganization law issued on October 26, 2020, opens up all of Jammu and Kashmir to every Indian citizen and removes every restriction that prevented large land holdings. Allows the Indian Armed Forces to take over land wherever they desire and gives sweeping powers to the government to take over any land and property for industrial use and bring in big businesses to set up their shops. People's Democratic Party President Mehbooba Mufti, while criticizing the government's move, accused India of land grab for big investors. The October 26, 2020 order repealed 13 state laws and amends 14 laws. Experts say this is to further the agenda behind the abrogation. According to historic date check, these laws were introduced to empower the majority Muslims who were suffering immensely under the non-Muslim rulers. Not only this, but the rights to buy and sell land in Kashmir were also confined to the people of Kashmir. Experts say India's move in Kashmir since August 5, 2019 has further internationalized this conflict. In response to the shutdown call by Pro-Freedom Camp of Kashmir, shops and businesses remained closed. Huge number of government forces were seen guarding the streets to avoid law and order problems. Almost 7 decades ago, these laws were introduced to empower the Muslim majority of Kashmir. But today, when the Hindu nationalist Bharatiya Janata Party is repealing and amending the same laws, the people of Kashmir are watching over helplessly. Experts say this move clearly depicts India's intentions in Kashmir. Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
The U.S. economy just recorded its largest quarter of economic growth ever, 33%. Too bad it comes on the heels of a 31% plunge in the last economic quarter. The seven-month-long failure to pass a second stimulus package pushed stocks to their worst week in 7 months. The U.S. appears to have been taken by surprise by the long-expected autumn wave of coronavirus, with new lockdowns creating major anger among the businesses who weren't bankrupted by the spring lockdowns.
The small manufacturing businesses, even small service businesses, we need to assume their expenses so that when we're on the other side of the pandemic, they're still viable. There isn't a will to do that, and I think that's because the government's really controlled by the major corporations and major banks, and they don't want it.
Pro-Trump media coverage is dominated by the ever-ballooning allegations of major financial corruption by the Biden family. Joe Biden has never disputed the authenticity of the proof which alleges corruption, but he has denied the allegations of corruption. Anti-Trump media is focused on widespread fears of post-election violence.
I tend to think we're going to get through the election okay, you know? But, you know, there are enough crazy people out there, and it's been promoted. That type of hatred has been promoted, by Trump. It's been promoted by television stations.
Right-wing media says the polls show that Donald Trump might lose the general election but will handily win the Electoral College vote. Their claim is based around the so-called shy voter theory that Trump supporters aren't talking honestly to polling agencies. Centrist media says the majority of polls maintain a small but narrowing lead for the challenger Joe Biden. They say Biden will win handily when the record number of mail-in ballots are totally counted, which could take many weeks. Add all that up and throw in a few more vital issues which we don't have the space to list, and it's clear that America is heading into a historic election in a hugely chaotic state marked by fear, uncertainty, and hysteria. The vote is on Tuesday, November 3rd. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
More protests were held in the Italian capital on Saturday over the government's decision to impose tougher measures to contain the spread of the pandemic. Early in the afternoon, hundreds of far-right demonstrators staged a rally in Campo di Fiori against a new decree which has ordered the closure of gyms, cinemas and theatres, requiring cafes and restaurants to close their doors at 6 p.m. Clashes with police were recorded during the demonstration. Later on Saturday, another protest was held in Independence Square, not far from Rome's central train station, where thousands of protesters vented their anger at the latest anti-COVID-19 restrictions. This demonstration, dubbed You Close Us, You Pay, was called by a coalition of social movements and base unions.
Unfortunately, the government has done nothing to reduce the flow of travelers on local public transports, which have been turned into hotbeds of COVID-19 transmission. Furthermore, too many workers have not received any payroll subsidies from the government yet. How can they pay their bills and mortgage installments?
The government cannot close cafes and restaurants at 6 p.m. Owners can scrape by, maybe. But what about us workers? These restrictions are killing us.
From north to south, Italy's been hit by a wave of protests, some violent, following the introduction of more stringent coronavirus shutdown measures by the government. The country's interior ministry has warned that these demonstrations have been infiltrated by subversives who are trying to stir up trouble.
As the contagion curve continues to rise in Italy, Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte insists he doesn't want to enforce another lockdown, but many fear a new national quarantine is becoming inevitable.
So many people have already closed like their activity after the first lockdown. Some managed to survive, but they won't survive a second lockdown.
The government is expected to present a decree including new restrictions as early as Monday. Targeted lockdowns and restrictions of movement between regions are among the new measures reportedly being discussed. Max Civili, Rome.
Violent clashes in Pakistani capital Islamabad. Police use heavy shelling to prevent thousands of angry protesters to march towards the French embassy in the capital. Protesters reached near the red zone after they forcibly removed heavy security barriers one after the other on the road leading towards the diplomatic enclave. At the heart of public anger is frequent incidents of blasphemy committed against the Prophet of Islam. Many protesters were injured in the violent clashes with the police. Over a dozen were also arrested.
This is just tip of the iceberg of a public anger against France. Protesters are saying that they are not going to settle down anything short of shutting down French embassy and expelling French ambassador from Islamabad.
French newspapers have repeatedly published blasphemous cartoons under the cover of freedom of speech. However, for Muslims in Pakistan and elsewhere, it was a politically motivated attempt to insult Islam, which according to a Pew survey is spreading across Europe. The official patronage to the blasphemers by the French government have added fuel to fire in Pakistan like elsewhere in the Muslim world.
If someone speaks against the dignity and honor of Rasulullah alayhi salatu wasalam, then we will say, my mother, my father, my children, each and every one of them, I am ready to sacrifice them on the dignity and honor of Rasulullah alayhi salatu wasalam. Now we are not going to tolerate it anymore, until and unless the ambassador of France would have been kicked out from Pakistan, we will be here inshallah ta'ala.
When you abuse of Prophet, when you insult him, nauzubillah, and when you keep doing it again and again, then we'll definitely respond. Everybody in this world will respond if you keep hurting their sentiments.
In retaliation to controversial remarks of French president against Islam, protesters insulted his images. Anti-France sentiments have surged suddenly at an unprecedented level after repeated incidents of blasphemy of Islam. Similar protests were also held across Pakistan. Like elsewhere in the Muslim world, people have started boycotting French products in Pakistan. Prime Minister Imran Khan says that France under President Macron is encouraging Islamophobia, which is creating further polarization and marginalization of Muslims in the West, that he believes would inevitably lead towards radicalization in the world. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
Outside the French embassy in London, angered British Muslims gathered to vent their frustrations. The protest comes amid rising violence in France over the ongoing debate of freedom of speech versus freedom to insult.
This is just one of the many protests taking place across the Muslim world. Muslims are indeed angry over what they say is deep insult by Western society led by France against Islam and its holiest figures. France claims that it's defending freedom of speech, but Muslims say that they feel indiscriminately persecuted in France and are targeted relentlessly by Western political leaders and by media sources too.
The focus of the anger was squarely pointed on the French president for his passionate defense of anti-Islam insults.
First and foremost, he needs to apologize and he needs to make a law that freedom of speech should have some limits. This is not freedom of speech. If I come and say to your father, if I start swearing at him, do you think that is freedom of speech? That's not. In the whole world, there are 1.7 billion Muslims. they will be ready to sacrifice their life in the name of Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. That the message should be very clear.